Welcome. It's Ray Lytle Show. How we doing? What's up, people? How are you? Day number 3 of test shows for the Ray Lytle Show. I hope that we have some of the same people tuning in that have listened the last 2 days. I'm back, of course. Today is post State of the Union episode. Of course, last night was President Obama's final State of the Union. I liked it. I'm not going to lie. I thought it was great. I thought he did a good job. I thought he went out there and tried to keep it, for the most part, realistic. I thought there were a few ambitious points. We discussed this a little bit yesterday. Remember I said, you know, you can't go out there with too big a laundry list because you've only got a year. So let's face it, you can't have too many things. And I think he kept it somewhat reasonable in his speech. If you missed it, by the way, why are you even listening to this show if you didn't check out the State of the Union? That's troubling, by the way, the amount of people I saw on Facebook who the biggest thing they had to complain about was, why the hell is this guy on all my TV channels? Come on. Seriously, you can't watch the State of the you can't watch the State of the Union without complaining? I don't understand people who don't listen to something and then complain about it. You know, it's like they admitted us. They admit to us that they didn't watch it, and then they put up a whole thing of notes. After saying, oh, I didn't watch any of that damn Obama. I don't watch that Obama. No good member, sleeper agent of the Muslim Brotherhood. And then you have all these notes as to what Obama said that was wrong. So either you're a liar and you did watch it, or you didn't watch it and you're getting your stuff secondhand from God knows what kind of conservative website. Obama did start it off. He started off the State of the Union, though. Pretty interesting, I thought, being very, very honest.
Tonight marks the 8th year that I've come here to report on the State of the Union. And for this final one, I'm going to try to make it a little shorter. I know some of you are antsy to get back to Iowa. I've been there. I'll be shaking hands afterwards if you want some tips.
By the way, applause for Marco Rubio, who was actually there. Unlike Ted Cruz, who was busy in New Hampshire. He couldn't even stop campaigning long enough to go back for State of the Union. Rubio actually showed up, as did I saw Bernie Sanders there. I saw Hillary Clinton was not there, of course. There's no reason for her to be there. She's not in any official capacity. I thought Rubio going back was a smart move. And I thought Bernie Sanders going back, smart move. I mean, come on, you're serving in Congress. I just think it's a bad message every time these guys run for office, how they're never doing their job. How are you supposed to convince people you're going to do your job as president if you can't even do the job you're doing as senator? Oh, well. Obama also talked about the benefits of working in Congress in another lighter moment of the State of the Union.
But a great education isn't all we need in this new economy. We also need benefits and protections that provide a basic measure of security. It's not too much of a stretch to say that some of the only people in America who are going to work the same job in the same place with a health and retirement package for 30 years are sitting in this chamber.
That was a great one. All right, so let's get to it. What was the president talking about? Well, first, for all of the people out there, conservatives, that are saying America is not the great country it used to be, America's weak, We're weak because we got a puss running the country. By God. He had a message for those people.
I told you earlier, all the talk of America's economic decline is political hot air. Well, so is all the rhetoric you hear about our enemies getting stronger and America getting weaker. Let me tell you something. The United States of America is the most powerful nation on earth. Period. Period. It's not even close.
By the way, no Republicans applauding again.
It's not even close.
Now, I don't understand that line in particular. The Republicans refusing to applaud at it. Why would you not applaud the thought of us being, the thought of the United States being the most powerful nation on earth? Especially since it's true. We spend more money on defense than any other nation in this world. In fact, last year we spent more money on defense than any nation ever has in the history of existence. Nobody has spent more money than us when it comes to the military. But yet somehow the Republicans still have you believe that we're a nation of weaklings with a sissy boy running it, with a limp-wristed Muslim sleeper agent who's so wimpy he can't do anything, but yet is so powerful he has intruded upon all our lives with his overreaching government. The hypocrisy continues. They wouldn't even applaud that. Wouldn't even applaud. In fact, that's going to be a recurring theme when you recap the State of the Union, because they didn't want to applaud it at facts. For example, President Obama talked about the economy not being in decline.
Let me start with the economy and a basic fact. The United States of America right now has the strongest, most durable economy in the world.
Only Democrats applauded.
In the middle of the longest streak of private sector job creation in history.
By the way, that's true. You cannot deny that fact. Using the same calculations that have always been used, we are in the most positive stretch ever for job growth. But yet, I keep hearing on conservative radio how horrible the economy is. Is the economy great? No, it's not great. Nobody says it's great, but what we're saying is it's not as horrible as the Republicans are making it sound, especially when you throw facts into the equation.
More than 14 million new jobs, the strongest 2 years of job growth since the 1990s, an unemployment rate cut in half. Our auto industry just had its best year ever.
By the way, these are all facts. They are facts.
That's just part of a manufacturing surge that's created nearly 900,000 new jobs in the past 6 years.
And can I point, these jobs were created at a time where Republican mandates, I'll say it, with the demand for decreased spending from the public sector has led to record losses in public jobs. In other words, they've forced President Obama to cut more federal public jobs than any other president has ever had to endure. A lot more than the last guy who was a Republican. That no one demanded him to cut jobs. And by the way, I would argue there's a lot of branches of government that, sure, there are a lot of branches that probably do need to be cut, but there are some branches that actually need more people employed. How about the VA? Wouldn't it be nice to have more people to actually take care of the compounding problem of files not being entered. The problems that they have from a simple management standpoint, and not just management of the property, but I mean management of the files. Things need to be scanned in. This needs to be done here. This needs to be filed. Just from an office standpoint, they need more people working in the VA. But we can't, because cuts that have been forced has our government at the limit where it has to be for public workers. Anyway, enough of that. Let's get back to the.
And we've done all this while cutting our deficits by almost 3/4. Anyone claiming that America's economy is in decline.
Just look over your left shoulder. The guy right standing behind you is exclaiming that, President Obama.
Is peddling fiction.
A fiction peddler. There you go. The Republicans are fiction peddlers.
Now,
J.K. Rowling might be the Speaker of the House. So, listen, is the economy great? No. But you have to at least admit that what he said is a fact. And I know there are some of you out there who are, I'm sure, are getting steamed as you hear this, and you're more than welcome to call. By all means, pick up the phone and dial 814-0332 if you have a different opinion. I understand a lot of you are listening on your devices right now. In fact, I can see I can see people listening. We have quite a few Apple iPhones listening. So if you're listening from the iPhone, thank you very much. And I see Androids listening as well. Thank you very much for that. However, I know you can't call in. Those of you listening from a desktop, though, if you feel like calling in, I'd love to talk to you. 217-814-0332. But let me get back. As he was taking some shots, and I'll admit, you know, those first two lines, let's face it, he was kind of taking some shots at the other side. I don't think he was taking a shot at Republicans in this one. I think he was taking a shot at one person in particular, and I wonder who that one person may be.
That's why we need to reject any politics that targets people because of race or religion. Yeah. Let me just say this. This is not a matter of political correctness. This is a matter of understanding just what it is that makes us strong. The world respects us not just for our arsenal. It respects us for our diversity and our openness and the way we respect every faith. When politicians insult Muslims, whether abroad or our fellow citizens, when a mosque is vandalized or a kid is called names, that doesn't make us safer. That's not telling it like it is. It's just wrong. It diminishes us in the eyes of the world. It makes it harder to achieve our goals. It betrays who we are as a country.
Yeah, sounds like a loser to me. Donald Trump, by the way, did react to the State of the Union. Because he was obviously talking about Donald Trump. And Trump did react, saying he thought the speech was... yeah, the speech was boring. He's a loser. Leave it to Trump. That's all I can say. Leave it to Trump to end up calling the president's speech, it was boring. But let's get back to it. This one resonated with me. The next clip I'm going to play, it really did. This clip got to me because this is where President Obama talks about some of his regrets. And I think this is a regret for everybody. I actually thought, well, I'll comment after I hear it. Let's play this first. I hope that some of you agree with me.
Democracy grinds to a halt without a willingness to compromise. Or when even basic facts are contested. Or when we listen only to those who agree with us. Our public life withers when only the most extreme voices get all the attention. And most of all, democracy breaks down when the average person feels their voice doesn't matter, that the system is rigged in favor of the rich or the powerful or some special interest. Too many Americans feel that way right now. It's one of the few regrets of my presidency that the rancor and suspicion between the parties has gotten worse instead of better. I have no doubt a president with the gifts of Lincoln or Roosevelt might have better bridged the divide. And I guarantee I'll keep trying to be better so long as I hold this office.
I'll tell you what, that really resonated with me, and I'll explain why. I thought in 2008, when President Obama was elected, I thought, okay, well, you know, the Tea Party was just starting to get going, and there was a big divide. There were some people that didn't like him. And I kind of thought this. I thought, you know what, and wrongfully so. I thought, you know what, there's just some racists out there that don't like the black guy being president. There's just some people who are wanting to be difficult. There's just people blindly being loyal to the Republican Party. They'll get over it. They'll get over it and will go about running the country the way they did, like with Bill Clinton. Because there was some divide when Bill Clinton took over. And eventually he and Newt Gingrich started doing their job. They started, you know, they started compromising. Remember, the Constitution called for statesmen to come together. I mean, the basic belief of the founding fathers and the early developers of our democracy, the concept of us coming together as a nation, is a simple one. It truly is a simple concept. And the concept is this. Statesmen come together, each with their own ideas, and they throw the ideas out. And rather than just pick one idea over the other, they meet, they communicate, they find the best parts of both ideas, they compromise, and then they settle on a thought. And that is what the final solution is. That's how it was supposed to be. That's how, by the way, that's how it's always been. And I think it's how Obama tried to start his presidency. He had the majority in both the House and the Senate, and for some reason, he decided to give in on some of the Republican issues. For example, I'll give you an example right here. The original Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care, originally had a public option in it. He was under the impression, he was told by Republicans, if you take the public option out, you'll get some votes. And for some reason, even though he didn't need them, he was under the impression that if he were to take out the public option, that he would get Republican votes. He didn't get any, and all he ended up with was a bill that didn't include the one thing that would have made it an even better bill, which was the public option. He also took out some cost controls for pharmaceutical companies. By the way, that did nothing for us, and it did nothing for him. He didn't get any Republican votes. So I think at one point he was under the impression that they were going to be statesmen and they were going to compromise, but not paying close enough attention to history, he didn't realize that's not how it starts out. Compromise is something you eventually fall into. And I think I was guilty as anybody. I thought they would fall into it. I thought after the 2010 elections, when the conservatives and the Republicans had such huge gains in this country, taking over the House, and then again when they ended up taking over the Senate, I thought for sure both sides would be forced to work together. And they just didn't. When John Boehner was speaker, he just said, ah, screw it. I'm not going to do it. And, of course, why would he? Look at Paul Ryan now. Why would he? Every time they have negotiated compromise and come up with a bill, you've got people on the right that attack them. They attack them. They call them sellouts. I mean, look at the grief. Look at the grief that Paul Ryan got because he passed a budget. We should have been applauding them for actually getting something done. Instead, people on both sides of the aisle attacked their representatives for giving in. Conservatives gave in because to them, a win was to simply halt the whole process and close down the government. That's the only thing they would have considered a win. By the way, that's a win that would have been horrible for this country. It's hurt our country when they've done that before. But somehow somebody has manipulated the Republican base into feeling that that's the only way they can succeed, which is terrible. And then there were people on the left that gave the president a hard time because of the compromises that he gave Paul Ryan and the Republicans in order to get a budget passed. And you had to get a budget passed. Somehow in the United States of America, it's not just at the federal level, it's the state level too. Look what we're going through in Illinois. Somehow in America, we have gotten to this point where people feel compromise is a loss. When our country was built on compromise. Our company's form of government was created with compromise being the single most important element of it. Compromise was what we were supposed to do. And nobody should ever come out feeling like they got 100% of what they wanted. Everyone should come out feeling like the best ideas, the best parts of their idea ended up going through. I'll give you an example. I look at my daughter. And genetically, as parents, I feel like my wife and I hit the jackpot. Granted, she's a little clumsier than we were hoping. Maybe she didn't get the running speed I wished she'd have gotten. But outside of a physical, I wish to God she'd be a little more motivated to be to move around, but I certainly appreciate how she's motivated in every other facet of her life. We hit the jackpot, and this is why. My wife and I, our DNA combined, and the best parts of my DNA, my daughter got. The best parts of my wife's DNA, my daughter got. So, I mentioned those things earlier, which, let's face it, they're not major things, but I had to find something. In saying that, yeah, in a perfect bill. When I went into this with my wife having a child, in my mind, she was going to be gorgeous like her mom. She was going to have my sense of humor. She was, I had all these things picked out that I want, and that's what I wanted. And I know what my wife wanted. And so, yeah, my daughter is, like I said, she can be a little clumsy. She does not run very fast. That was part of my original bill that we had to lose in compromise. There are things that my wife wanted for my daughter, and we lost those. But still, we ended up with the jackpot. I think we ended up with a hell of a bill, hell of a law. and my daughter. That's how it should be in Congress, you know. They should go in saying, boy, in a perfect world, I want this. And the other side says, well, we want this. And they both go in, they compromise, they take the best parts of both things, and that's what ends up being the law. That's how America's always been. That's how America was founded. That is what America was supposed to be. However, somehow, and I don't know, maybe it's President Obama's fault. I don't know. But somehow, we have these people in this country who it's all or nothing. I want 100% of what I want, or I'm considering it a loss, and I'm going to blame the people that are representing me for all of it. That's what we've had going on in this country. Listener Steve says, Ray, the State of the Union was just as I thought. It was a giant pile of bullshit, pardon my French, everyone, spewed by an amoral, megalomaniac, narcissist, dumbass, a sociopathic, delusional, naive moron of a president. Well, you see, that seemed reasonable. But no offense to Steve. Actually, I guess it is offense to Steve. There's your problem. There's your problem right now. People think like Steve. They're 100% convinced that our president, who, by the way, a constitutional lawyer from Harvard Law School, one of the more intelligent people in his college class, a very intelligent man. I know you hate to admit it. He's smarter than you. He's smarter than me. He's a bright guy. The people that he's got working around him, they're smarter than us. It's okay to be smart. I know some of you see it as weakness, but it's okay to be smart. But yet Steve, who sent me a message here, says that he is a megalomaniac, narcissist, amoral, dumbass, sociopathic, delusional, naive moron. He's calling a brilliant man a moron. And why? Why is he calling him that? Because he comes from the other side of the aisle. So, yeah, I'm with President Obama. I wish we could have found a way for these two sides to work together. And he says now that he wants to. I can guarantee you he's going to find very, very few people on the other side that also want to give it a shot. And I'll explain why. One of the things he said last night was something that's very, very Republican. And that is the fact that sometimes the government gets in the way. Sometimes there's too much red tape. We need to cut some of it. He didn't get a lot of applause. And then he actually got some grumbling. When he finished it up by talking about how even though we need to cut red tape and make things easier for business, we can't let them call the shots. Give this a listen and you'll know what I'm talking about.
I think there are outdated regulations that need to be changed. There is red tape that needs to be cut.
By the way, that is out of the Republican playbook. That's what Republicans feel. When I considered myself a Republican, that's exactly what we felt. Is that there's too much regulation in some areas. There are too many obstacles put up for people trying to turn middle-sized businesses into big businesses or small-sized businesses into medium-sized businesses. There's too much red tape. And it sometimes gets in the way. That is a Republican idea. He wasn't getting any applause for it from the Republicans. Paul Ryan was sitting with his thumb up as you know what. What didn't even applaud to that.
There you go.
However, when they finally realized, wait a minute, did he just say what I thought he said? He actually got a couple Republicans to start applauding. And look at that. Now a couple of them even are standing up.
Yeah.
They're standing up. It's a miracle.
But after years now of record corporate profits, working families won't get more opportunity or bigger paychecks just by letting big banks or big oil or hedge funds make their own rules at everybody else's expense.
Well, he lost the Republicans with that line. And that's what I don't understand. What is it about what he just said there that Republicans found offensive? What is it about what he just said right there did not cause those same people that were just applauding 10 seconds earlier? What turned him off when he said, let's make sure that people in the middle class have the same opportunity as people in the upper class? Let's not give so much power to people who every time they've gotten power, without fail, have used the power to fire middle class and lower class Americans. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. No applause.
Well, middle class families are not going to feel more secure because we allowed a tax on collective bargaining to go unanswered. Food stamp recipients did not cause the financial crisis. Recklessness on Wall Street did. Immigrants aren't the principal reason wages haven't gone up. Those decisions are made in the boardrooms that all too often put quarterly earnings over long-term returns. It's sure not the average family watching tonight that avoids paying taxes through offshore accounts.
I want you to listen to the lack of support he got in what he was saying. There weren't even Democrats applauding at some of that. Tell me any single American, with the exception of the ones who are worth billions of dollars, who disagreed with what he just said there. When he said food stamp recipients were not responsible for the recession, I mean, immigrants are not responsible for job loss. I mean, come on. How do you not? He talked about corporate. How do you not applaud that? I don't understand it. I really, really don't understand it.
I think there are outdated regulations.
How did people?
Immigrants aren't the principal reason wages haven't gone up. Those decisions are made in the boardrooms that all too often put quarterly earnings over long-term returns. It's sure.
By the way, no applause. It's true. They put quarterly earnings all the time above all else. Isn't there anyone else sick? Isn't there anybody else out there that you're just sick of being a number? Aren't you sick of it? Do you remember the Bob Seger song? Feel like a number. Remember that song? Aren't you sick of it? You shouldn't just be a number to corporate America. And when we get to the point where we are just numbers to corporate America, we need to change it. There's something wrong. When we get to that point, it's time to fix it. The guys sitting on those boards, the CEOs running the companies, the people in charge don't see us as individuals. And by us, I mean the middle class and lower. Anybody out there, if you work for a corporation, you're not seen as an individual. You're seen as a number. It's usually the number of what your salary is. Some of us are so small, we're not even thought of as a salary. We're thought of as a piece of a budget for an entity. And as long as corporate America refuses to see us as individuals, they're going to treat us like property. They're going to treat us like garbage. That's what you're looking at. It's the same as them deciding what to do with the garbage. Well, go through the garbage. and try to find the good garbage and separate it and then just throw the rest in the trash. I'll throw the rest out to the curb. In fact, I'm instead of garbage, hold on. I'll make leftovers. We're thought of as leftovers after a party. And the party is whatever it is your business does. That's the party. That's the party. You're the leftovers. They go through the leftovers and the stuff that maybe they like, oh, you know what? There's still some meat on that bone we can suck off tomorrow. We can nibble on that bone tomorrow. So keep that there. Oh, those are some napkins left over from the party, so put those in the cabinet because we can use them again for the next party. Oh, there's some forks. We can wash those and use those again. There's only a few of us that seem to be forks anymore. Oh, those are the real serving trays and the plates. Wash those and put those in the comfortable cabinets. We also have some serving tray and plates amongst us. Unfortunately, the rest of us, yeah, those paper plates, yeah, those used napkins, ooh. The leftover food, throw that all in the trash. We won't need that for our next party, so throw that away. And maybe someone says, well, this napkin here is only slightly used. You know what? Still throw it away. It's cheaper for us to just get a new napkin when we need it next time than it is to use that somewhat wrinkled one. Even though no one wiped their face with it, it was bent once. So let's just throw it away. That's how corporate America looks at its workers. The middle management or the serving trays, they stay on. Low-level management, your plates, yeah, they'll stay around. Workers who aren't making too much, they're the forks. They stick around. They get washed. They are used the next time. The food, which is the main course of the party, is what the success of the party was built on. The food. Let's face it. The food is the employee that makes too much money. The corporation says, well, this party's over. Throw the food away. It's too much money. It would cost too much money to keep the food around to use next party. It would cost too much money. So we don't want to pay for refrigeration. Throw it away. Oh, yeah, by the way, next time we're going to bring in Chinese food. There you go. And what President Obama is saying is, hey, that's not right.
We're not the average family watching tonight that avoids paying taxes through offshore accounts.
Nobody applauds. It's true. The average middle class person, we don't have offshore accounts. We don't hide money in the Caymans. But yet we're the ones that pay 100% of the taxes that we owe. I know some of you are probably listening to this going, oh, BS, but I'm telling you, you know I'm onto something. You know I'm onto something. And you like that analogy. Maybe I've even opened some eyes and people going, wow, wait a minute. That's pretty gay. He might be onto something. But somehow in this country, we see this going on and we decide to applaud the corporations. They boo the thought of the middle class. They boo the thought of the average person achieving. And we applaud the achievement of the people of the haves. We applaud achievements of the haves and we either doubt or are jealous of any achievements of the have-nots. That's what's happened in the last 8 years. It's very sad. There was a time when we didn't just settle, and the president talked about that last night.
How do we reignite that spirit of innovation to meet our biggest challenges? 60 years ago, when the Russians beat us into space, we didn't deny Sputnik was up there. We didn't argue about the science or shrink our research and development budget. We built a space program almost overnight, and 12 years later, we were walking on the moon.
There you go, the other line that might have been the best line of the night. For the climate change deniers, aka conservatives, far-right conservatives, because I actually know a lot of conservatives that actually believe in climate change. They just ignore it. They just deny it. They deny the fact. And President Obama used the example of one of the greatest times in United States history, which is when the Russians put a ship in space in Sputnik. If it would happen today, we would just say, oh, Sputnik's not up there. Even though we're saying, hey, we can see Sputnik. It's up there. We see it. It's there. If it was today, we would just deny it like we do climate change. However, I do want to point out, there were jackasses and still are jackasses who thought we faked the moon landing. Remember? So, there were jackasses back then too. We just have a lot more of them now.
So my fellow Americans, whatever you may believe, whether you prefer one party or no party, whether you supported my agenda or fought as hard as you could against it, our collective futures depends on your willingness to uphold your duties as a citizen, to vote, to speak out.
They won't.
To stand up for others.
They won't.
Especially the weak.
They won't.
Especially the vulnerable. Knowing that each of us is only here because somebody, somewhere, stood up for us.
So you think that would have gotten everybody. You think everybody could have agreed on that. Yeah, they couldn't. Couldn't even agree on that. They can't agree on anything. What about ISIS? Could they agree on
as
ISIS?
As we focus on destroying ISIS, over-the-top claims that this is World War III just play into their hands. Masses of fighters on the back of pickup trucks, twisted souls plotting in apartments or garages, they pose an enormous danger to civilians. They have to be stopped. But they do not threaten our national existence. If you doubt America's commitment, or mine, to see that justice is done, just ask Osama bin Laden. The world will look to us to help solve these problems. And our answer needs to be more than tough talk or calls to carpet bomb civilians. That may work
Ouch.
As a TV soundbite, but it doesn't pass muster on the world stage.
By the way, that was a shot directly at Ted Cruz, who suggested that we should just carpet bomb civilians. And Ted Cruz didn't like it one bit. President Obama and his feckless attempts. I'm sure we'll hear some Ted Cruz later.
I'm guessing we won't agree on health care anytime soon. But, oh, applause back there. Just a guess.
Oh, my goodness. The one thing that he did say, though, is we're going to cure cancer.
You know, last year, Vice President Biden said,
by the way, don't get too excited because look who he's going to put in charge of curing it.
That with a new moonshot, America can cure cancer. So tonight I'm announcing a new national effort to get it done. And because he's gone to the mat for all of us on so many issues over the past 40 years, I'm putting Joe in charge of mission control. For the loved ones we've all lost, for the families that we can still save. Let's make America the country that cures cancer once and for all. What do you think, John? Let's make it happen.
And I'd love to see it happen. I really would love to see it happen, but they won't even give funding to prevent climate change. Well, basically, they think they're going to give funding to cure cancer. Anyway, I thought it was a good speech. I thought it was a good State of the Union. Let's find out what the Republican response was. It was by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who I don't think was terrible. I thought the interesting thing is, anybody else notice that her teeth stay together when she pronounces some consonants? That's actually pretty impressive. That is pretty impressive. To be able to keep those, that it was a really weird, if you haven't watched it, watch it. It's very strange. She has this ability to keep her front teeth together and pronounce consonants. That is very hard to do. She was pulling it off, though. Some people did not like her speech. Some people didn't like it because she wasn't hating on immigrants. And obviously, if you're not hating on immigrants, then you're no friend of certain conservatives. But here is her response.
During anxious times, it can be tempting to follow the siren call of the angriest voices. We must resist that temptation. No one who is willing to work hard, abide by our laws, and love our traditions should ever feel unwelcome in this country. At the same time, we must fix our broken immigration system. That means stopping illegal immigration. And it means welcoming properly vetted legal immigrants, regardless of their race or religion, just like we have for centuries. I have no doubt that if we act with proper focus, we can protect our borders, our sovereignty, and our citizens, all while remaining true to America's noblest legacies.
Yeah, I got to admit, I was a little shocked at some of her response. I thought there'd be some anti-Obama vitriol. There really, there really wasn't. In fact, I saw a lot of people on Facebook be offended by her, which I don't get. By the way, this might be living proof that the Republican Party is Dr. Frankenstein. You created a monster. You created a monster in trying to cause discourse to the betterment of your ideology. You ended up creating a monster that's now out of control. People were attacking Nikki Haley for stuff like this.
In many parts of society today, whether in popular culture, academia, the media, or politics, there's a tendency to falsely equate noise with results. Some people think that you have to be the loudest voice in the room to make a difference. That's just not true. Often the best thing we can do is turn down the volume. When the sound is quieter, you can actually hear what someone else is saying. And that can make a world of difference.
And that is the woman who the Republicans would like to see run for vice president, Nikki Haley. I was surprised by how calm her response to the president's State of the Union was. The last few State of the Unions have been guys throwing it out there, This is the worst president we have ever seen. We didn't get that from her. In fact, if anything, it seemed like she wasn't giving the State of the Union. It seemed like she wasn't giving the response to the State of the Union by President Obama. It seemed like she was giving the State of the Republican Party response to Donald Trump running for president. It seemed like a lot of people were taking time yesterday, whether it be the president, other candidates, Ted Cruz, By the way, Donald Trump is full birther mode against Ted Cruz now. As soon as Cruz, and now in some Iowa polls, Cruz is actually beating Trump, so Trump is on full anti-Ted Cruz mode. But everyone, both sides ganging up on Donald Trump. I actually heard Cruz say the words last night. Two things I heard Cruz say. Number one, he said, you know, polls show that Donald Trump loses to Hillary Clinton. Unlike me, where I don't know if you've heard, but polls have showed that I would win in a head-to-head election with Hillary Clinton. By the way, all polls don't show that. There are polls that show Donald Trump would beat Hillary Clinton, and there's one poll that shows Ted Cruz would do it. And the other thing I saw Cruz do last night after the speech, CNN talked to him, is he bashed Obama. You know, he's just another Harvard elitist. He bashed Obama and the Harvard, you know, basically said those snobs from Harvard. He talks about Obama and his Harvard buddies, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't know the exact words. The Harvard elitist. He talks about Obama and how Obama and his Harvard friends and how they shouldn't be running the country. By the way, while he's doing that, all right, while Cruz is bashing the president and his Harvard friends, he and his buddies from Harvard, he might want to mention, he might want to mention that he also is a graduate of Harvard Law School. So when Ted Cruz is bashing Harvard elitist, as he calls them, he should probably mention to people that he is one. President Obama is the perfect Harvard Law School president. He and his elitist Harvard friends. You're one of those elitist Harvard people, Ted. You went to Harvard Law School. Did you forget where you went to college? Ted, why are you bashing the president for being exactly what you are? And nothing drives me crazy. Nothing drives me crazy than when I see this and I go, wait a minute. He said, Ted Cruz actually says this. He says things like, President Obama was brainwashed by Harvard Marxists. President Obama was, while at Harvard Law School, he was with those Harvard elitists. By the way, President Obama went to Harvard. As Ted Cruz says, that Obama was taught by Harvard Marxists. We can't trust him. We can't trust him because he was taught at Harvard by these elitists at Harvard. He was that Obama, while being taught in Harvard Law School, he learned what he learned, which is very dangerous for the country. I'm paraphrasing. By the way, Obama was studying constitutional law. Can I point out, someone else who went to Harvard Law School studied constitutional law and was taught by the same teachers. And that would be Ted Cruz. But he never mentions, you notice he never mentions that. He never mentions that he was also taught by the same professors at the same college, earning the same degree. It's insane when he bashes the president for going to Harvard. When he went to Harvard, of course, no one ever bothers to ask, when he's saying shit like that, how come, are we saying stuff like that, excuse me. I am on the internet. But when he says stuff like that, how does no one ask, Senator Cruz, where did you go to college again? You also went to Harvard? How does no one question that? Now listen, when Trump does it, I don't have a problem with Trump doing it. I don't have it because Trump didn't go to Harvard Law School. Trump went to the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. I mean, don't get me wrong, he got a good education. But he didn't go to Harvard Law School. He went to Wharton School, University of Pennsylvania, and he got his bachelor's at Fordham University. Trump never went to Harvard. When you see Trump bashing Obama for going to Harvard, you can say, okay, well, I think it's incorrect. I think we should probably appreciate people who were, I think we should appreciate people who were smart enough to get into what is the most prestigious college in the world. But if some people think it's a bad thing, okay, that's fine. But I don't think that you can say it's a bad thing to go there when you yourself went there. If that shows me anything, it shows that Ted Cruz thinks the people following him are so stupid that they're not going to bother to check his background. And by the way, he's right on that. A lot of them will never check his background. They just won't. So it's just very, whenever I hear Ted Cruz say that, I can't believe people actually fall for it. I really can't. All right, other response to the State of the Union. There was some. It wasn't a politician. Other response came from, well, Jimmy Fallon.
So let's take a look at the pros and cons of Obama's final State of the Union address. Here we go. Pro, last year, President Obama said the State of our Union is strong. Con, this year he said the State of our Union is not my problem anymore. Oh, I'm outie.
Outie.
I'm outie 5,000.
Eight.
Pro, he unveiled his six-part plan to pay off our national debt. Con, it's 14, 37, 28, 32, 52, Powerball, 9. Powerball number.
Buy more tickets.
Pro, Obama said that in the 2016 election, history will be made. Con will be the first time that anyone ever went black, then went back.
Really?
First time for everything.
That is true.
Interesting. Pro watching on TV and thinking, damn, Obama's gotten old. Con then seeing a picture of yourself from 8 years ago going, oh. Not that bad. Not that bad, I guess. That was pretty good. Pro, before the speech, Obama saw the good dinosaur. Con, a.k.a. Bernie Sanders. Is that what they call him that?
That's his nickname?
I didn't know that. It was a biopic.
I was not aware of that.
I have not seen the film. Pro, Obamacare. Con, now Obama don't care.
There you go. Catchy slogan. Yep.
And finally, pro, Obama ended his speech by saying, God bless America. Con, and if Trump wins, God help you. That's what he said. That's the pros and cons. We'll be right back.
There you go. The State of the Union recap. on the Ray Lytle Show. We do this show right around 4 o'clock every afternoon here at SpringfieldTalk.com. Thank you so much for listening and for downloading the podcast. Please come back and join me tomorrow. Tell your friends, SpringfieldTalk.com. We're doing test shows this week. Real show and schedule to start very soon. Come back tomorrow around 4 o'clock. We'll talk again. Thank you so much for listening. It's Ray Lytle. Saying so long, everybody.